Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Bruised and battered, shares of Apple slumping, now down nearly 12% for the year, and a major drag on the markets today. iPhone troubles in China, falling behind in AI. Those are just a couple of the bear case talking points. We'll get the bullish take coming up, plus a coming obesity bomb, why a former Obama economic aide is warning the boom in weight loss drugs could become a government budget buster if something isn't done and soon. To fix this pricing problem, the traders are set to weigh in on this one. Pun unfortunately intended.
Yes.
And later, Bitcoin's record-breaking rise and big-time retreat targets retail recovery and major stock pop and bringing generative AI to the insurance business. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Dan Nathan, Guy Adami, and Julie Beal. We start off with Apple shares in reverse, the one-time biggest company in the world, seeing its stock drop another 2.8% today. They are now down more than 14% from the record high hit less than 3 months ago. The company has lost more than $450 billion in market cap in that period. That's more than the entire value of United Health. The latest catalyst weighing in on the stock, a report that found iPhone sales in China plunged 24% in the first 6 weeks of the year. Market share in the company's third biggest market also falling. And Apple's weakness today did seem to filter into the broader market. The Nasdaq falling as much as 2%, closing just above the 16,000 mark. The S&P and Dow also down more than 1%. So was this the break in the market euphoria that some of the desk have been waiting for? Before you answer that, I want to point out that both NVIDIA and Supermicro actually finished higher today. So what's the deal here, Tim?
Well, if we're answering the big, like today, are you a Brady Bunch fan guy?
Who isn't?
So remember the Marsha?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So today was China. Everywhere you looked, it was China. It was China on Apple sales. It was China in AMD. It was China back home in China not delivering. It was China beefing up their defense. I mean, it was Tesla seeing shipments dive in China. It was all about China. Back to Apple. If you think about where Apple's been getting their growth, we know services have been where they've been getting their multiple, but they over-indexed to U.S. and China. So 33% of global iPhone sales are U.S. and China. They're around 54%, and they're losing ground fast to Huawei. So some of this are the dynamics that we've been talking about for a long time on this desk, which is that if you make things really ugly for China, I think some of our most important companies are going to find it kind of tough out there, too. Then there's Huawei, what they've been doing on their just on their own. I mean, they picked up 750 basis points of market share in the last year, and Apple's fallen 200. So the dynamic here around things that I think have been plaguing Apple for some time, and more importantly at this point, it's the market that's plaguing. I mean, you know, the fundamentals are what's bringing this story forward, but it's very clear. Apple has been underperforming and a relative underperformer for a long time. That's dead money for over 2 years now, if you look at where they got to 179 in March of 22.
Yeah, and the data from Hanhai on 18% sales slump, that really underscores this notion that China is weak. It's a problem market. Apple had been given the benefit of the doubt for a long time in terms of its revenue has been slowing, and now it's not. And that's part of the story, right, of the differentiation amongst the biggest cap tech
stocks. It's not being given the benefit of the doubt. 100% right. And finally, today, at least today, the market caught up. And staying with the Brady Bunch.
Why
because
wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
Yes.
So Ann B. Davis, as you know.
Alice.
Nice job.
Tremendous.
Nice job.
But she was the center square. I mean, she was the linchpin to that entire family, if you think about it. And there was an episode where she left because she didn't think she was needed anymore. The whole place went to bleep. Dan used the word.
That was Alice on K.
Remember that whole thing.
That was Alice on K.
With that said, that sort of Apple is the linchpin to the entire thing, I believe. And now it's finally starting to show the signs of why it is. Now, the thing you have to figure out is where am I buying Apple here, not where am I selling it. Those days, I think, are over. The first level comes in the form of the October low, 165-ish. We'll see what happens if and when we get there. And then you're probably talking if, in fact, it overshot. You know, 152 is the next level. But I do think, finally, the market's starting to catch on to the Apple weakness.
So we as a show are not afraid to admit that we are wrong.
Every day.
We say it gladly.
What we do.
Yeah, just yesterday, we led the show with this notion that, oh, the market is broadening, Apple's down, and we're okay, Julie. And yet here we are today. Maybe we're not so okay. Where do you stand on that in terms of whether or not you need Apple in order to advance here?
I don't think you need Apple, but I think what you do need is we do need more breadth in this market in order for people to feel confident that there is some staying power and there is some strength in the economy. The biggest problem we have is that the economic data is going all different kinds of directions. And so people are flocking to the growth stories that they feel good about, that they feel are durable. And so you see that anytime there's any kind of whiff, we're going to talk about a big whiff of mine later in the show. Anytime you see any kind of whiff, people sell the stocks aggressively. And so that's kind of what we're seeing here. I do think that the long-term fundamentals in Apple are good and interesting. I think they're going to do the same thing in AI that they've done in all of their other businesses, which they are a fast follower, and then they design and make it better, and they leverage the fact that everyone believes they're a safe and secure place. But in the meantime, I agree. I think it's really challenging for the stock to work from here.
Yeah, I agree with all that, and I think they are a very good fast follower. And when you think about that, this is a really important fast follow, though, because where they get this margin, right, on services, this is what this is going to be tied to, right? And so the hardware business is declining, and right, and they have, 15% market share in China, 20% of their sales come from China. And so China, again, that's a separate conversation here. So how are they going to actually go from a 45% gross margin, justify a 30%? It was trading at 30 times. I mean, that's really important just to remember, just 2 months ago. So now it's about 26 times, and you don't get there on a hardware sort of multiple, right? So you need to have something in the Gen AI space. And the fact that it's only down 13% on the fact that some of these other mega cap tech leaders like Microsoft and, Amazon and Meta have caught up, and obviously NVIDIA is a different sort of story here. This actually does present an opportunity. I think the way Guy kind of mentioned it a little bit is not, figuring out where to sell it, is actually figuring out to where to buy it. I know you were talking about 160 a lot all summer long. It almost got there. It got to about 165 or so. I think at that point, it discounts a whole heck of a lot of the skepticism around their lack of Gen AI. And the other thing I'll just say is about Vision Pro. When you think about spatial computing, it really is about services going forward, right? And that will, all of this AI sort of stuff will work into that at some point. And I go back to our conversation last night with the CEO of Perplexity. I think there are certain opportunities that will exist for some of these big platform companies. Most of them will not be able to make acquisitions.
Right.
Apple probably can. When you think about what Amazon's been able to do in this space, what Meta's been able to do in this space, what Google's been able to do in this space, and obviously Microsoft. So that one, to me, kind of plugs a hole. One last thing here before I go away. The China thing. I don't think the market's here. I don't think investors are paying enough attention to this. China is exporting deflation right now. China has a huge youth unemployment problem. China has a huge demographic problem. These are things that are not fixed very quickly. Our government is getting a little focused on the idea of dumping EVs and all this sort of stuff. If they start dumping all sorts of things because they don't have the internal consumption dynamics, this is going to spread from Apple and Tesla to other parts of our markets, other parts of our multinationals that are relying on China. So I think this is a precursor. I know we've been saying this for a long time, but it's here, people. I mean, that's what Tesla and Apple are telling you right now.
Well, I don't know that it's priced into a lot of U.S. companies that are so dependent on China. I hear you. And again, this was like China Super Tuesday. I mean, there was a lot going on out there. And I think they disappointed in terms of a policy response. I think we've priced in a lot of China pain in the Chinese stocks. I'm not sure we've priced enough of it into the U.S. stocks. And so we could go around to Nike. We could go to Starbucks. I mean, we've played this game. And meanwhile, the rhetoric only ratchets up that much more. So I do think it's a really important point. I do think we're kind of Goldilocks on a lot of different stuff. The fact that NVIDIA closed higher on the day when semis were down 1.5%. And by the way, at one point, semis were down significantly more than that. It just tells you where I think there is a lot of fear. And that is the FOMO kind.
I mean, NVIDIA and Supermicro,
yeah, it's impressive.
The latest entrant to the S&P 500. Finishing higher today of all stock.
Yeah, it's in a word impressive. I'm glad Tim flagged that because on a day where they had every reason to take those names out to the woodshed and leave them there, they crawled their way back. So good for them, I guess. I'm not quite sure what that's on the back of. I mean, if that is a flight to safety, then I think we're all having a much different conversation because that's a little bit scary. But you can't deny the fact that there is still a thirst for these names without question on valuations that I think are stretched, but clearly the rest of the market doesn't seem to at this point.
Our next guest says that despite current weakness, Apple could be set for a monster turnaround when it unveils its first foundational AI model this summer. Fast Money friend Gene Munster, Deepwater Asset Management, joins us now. Gene, great to have you with us. And you tweeted this yesterday, and I thought that was really interesting because we've all been trying to think about, you know, what is that upside? What is that unknown? If Apple manages to come out with something, we've all got these phones, and the likelihood of us saying, you know what, I'll pay X dollars a month and to sort of capture that revenue right away seems to be sort of low-hanging fruit, but you walked through your assumptions yesterday. Can you go through 1.4 billion active users and then what?
So they've got 2.2 billion active devices. That's the number that they give. They don't give out the monthly active users, but you can back into that. And as you said, it's about 1.4 billion. And they have a history of having services, obviously everything from music to iCloud storage to Apple TV. And if they can, and on average, those are about $9 a month. And so if you just take a product that's personalized AI, and I'm going to talk about the product in 2 seconds here, but you take a personalized AI product, you sell it to 20% of that base for $10 a month, that's going to add over 15% to operating earnings. And I think that's a very achievable piece. 15% to operating income is important when you look in the context that Apple, after they report the March quarter, their business will be down on average 2% per quarter. And so anything in the growth direction is going to be viewed as positive. I buried the lead, Melissa, the question about what is personalized AI. This is a chatbot essentially that is personalized to you and will do tasks for you. So it could remediate a utility bill that you don't like. It could set up some social event. There's infinite number of things that you can do with a personalized AI. Apple, of course, is in a unique position related to their privacy and security, a unique position in the sense that consumers have to give their data to have this personalized AI be acted, and I think that people will take that. So that's the lever to the model. If I may, Melissa, I want to quickly go back to the conversation more broadly related to everything that's wrong with Apple. And I think that the panel did an excellent job of just framing in what the near-term concerns are. And when I think about those are things that are potent in the near term. And the key question that I have when I think even beyond AI is a very simple question, is are we going to use devices in the future? And if the answer is yes to that, Apple is the only company that brings together hardware, software, services, soon to add AI to that. Think about that. Name another company that seamlessly brings hardware together across devices. Nobody does that. And so I understand this is a dark chapter for Apple, but I believe that once they inject AI into that ecosystem of hardware, software, services, bring that together, I think that this tide will turn.
So we had the co-founder and CEO of Perplexity on yesterday, and we were discussing his thoughts on Google's AI problem. And I thought he framed it really nicely and succinctly in that, you know, when you use the word Google as a verb, it's almost synonymous with finding the answer. It is the equivalent of finding the truth. And it's almost the opposite case with Apple and Siri. It's almost a universal joke that Siri is terrible. Everybody hates Siri. And, you know, Siri can't understand anything that you're saying. So where does that put the bar in terms of Apple having to deliver on this personalized AI if there's already this notion that the AI that Apple has in your device currently, which is Siri, is horrendous?
The one advantage that Apple has is that even though the product is horrible, Siri's horrible today. It does three things for you. It can do a call, it can set a timer and tell you the weather. Even though the product is not up to par, people still use it, and they use it multiple times a day. And that's the opportunity for Apple. They don't have to have the best. They don't have to compete with the best foundation models. They got to do it good enough where people say, this made my day better. And I think that is a low bar for them to clear. And I think that they're not going to do it in June, but they're going to show the framework of how they start to improve that.
Gene, I know you've been bullish. I know you've been right. The stock since July of last year, it's been sort of a weird trading environment for the name. Topped out, traded back off. I think it basically tried to make a new all-time high, traded off again. Here we are at these current levels. Understanding that the difference between 170 and 165 doesn't matter if you think it's going to 250. However, I know there's a little bit of a stock trader in you. So where do you think this thing gets down to when you get out there and say, you know what, that's it, that's the bottom?
I think we're close. And I think that today's injection from Counterpoint about China being down 24%, you're on the math on that. If that ends up holding up for the quarter, they'll miss their numbers by 3%. The stock was down 2.5% today. I think that it's never fully priced in, but I think we're getting close to that. It has been, by my measurement, this has been the worst month and a half for Apple from an investor standpoint. There's always a fire out there, but we've got four fires going on right now. This has been the worst, and I think that sets up for a good rebound in the next 6 to 12 months.
So, Gene, I guess that's the point. By the way, if Apple can ever actually get involved in a dispute I have with the cable company, I will put a 50 multiple on it.
I mean, that'd be amazing.
Fantastic. But it gets back to what you're saying. I mean, this period of 6 weeks, I think it's been a lot longer. And I get back to you, the analyst. What's the multiple? Because we've been having no problem putting a much higher multiple on Apple for the last 3 years, 4 years around services. You make great points on the comparison to Meta and where at what point that, you know, that, you know, essentially those DAUs, those MAUs, whatever they're counting these days. But talk about the multiple, because, you know, around 30 times is where most of the street is willing to stay, despite the fact that it's been such a period of, you know, lack of anything.
So that Meta example, just to kind of fill in the broader audience here, is the basic idea is that when Meta was wiped out, people forgot the general, how big their install base was, the DAUs, their kind of that fabric, that framework. That's the same thing about Apple and their devices. I think that the reason why I mention that and make that comparison is I think that that is a justification for a multiple that is outpaced relative to the company's growth rate. I think the multiple is ultimately in the high 20s. Until they start to show some excitement around AI, then I think it can go higher. Let's put it in the high 20s, a 28 multiple, put an $8 earnings number on that in a couple of years. I think you get 225, around 225. The loose math there is you get 30% upside. So if AI, to answer your question, Tim, is the multiple is not going to go up much if they don't crack the code around showing that the business is going to reaccelerate. If they do show a reacceleration from the business, I think the multiple goes up.
Gene, always great to hear from you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Gene Munster, Deepwater Asset Management. What's your take?
Yeah, I agree on most of what Gene said. The one issue I have is that, you know, for them to get material revenue that will cause the sort of bump in margins and justify a higher multiple, it's just years away, like from a product offering in and around AI, because they're going to probably introduce a phone that has AI on the phone.
The literally margins are very high on AI.
Well, right, but think about this. Okay, I just want to be really clear. So Microsoft, you know, 69% gross margin company versus, let's say, Apple at 45. Microsoft has, you know, mid-teens expected growth for the next year. Apple has mid-single digits, right? So, and they don't have Gen AI. So if you're going to make a bet here, you're probably going to bet that Microsoft's going to be able to inflect at some point, right? And get a lot of leverage from the investments that they made in this open AI thing. And Apple has not articulated a single thing that they're doing on the thing that the market is actually paying up for right now. And that's why the stock is being sold.
So you just did a self, would you rather, but I like what you did.
I like what you did in terms
of the inflection and the investment now and when it's going to pay off. So Julia, I'll put the same question to you. Microsoft or Apple here right now for AI and for stock
probably
gains,
Microsoft.
Obviously.
I would say probably Microsoft, not just because they've already made the investments. It's like they have the right people. Think of how stressed out everyone was when there was all the drama with the OpenAI board. You know, the keys to OpenAI are really with a handful of people. The fact that Google has spent so much money, so many years, and can't really come that close to it, tells you everything you need to know. So I think the IP is really with Microsoft right now.
All right. Meantime, the 10-year yield dropping to its lowest level in a month today, crossing below its 200-day moving average. This comes ahead of Fed Chair Jerome Powell's semi-annual testimony before Congress, which starts tomorrow. Let's get straight to senior economics reporter Steve Leisman with what to expect. What kind of Powell are we going to hear from tomorrow, Steve?
I think, Melissa, the thing to listen for is that it's going to break it down into three different categories here, or three different areas. You've got the political side, the regulatory side, and the economic side. Politically, expect Republicans to coax Powell into being more cautious or concerned with inflation. Democrats might argue more so the case for cuts. Futures markets going into this testimony price for little chance of a rate cut in March or May. Better chance of cuts beginning in June. Financial regulation might be a hot button issue there, Melissa, with plenty of criticism from the Republican side and even some Democrats about plans to require banks to hold more capital. I expect a bit of that back and forth tomorrow. Economically, that's where it gets interesting. Powell is sure to note that inflation progress you've had, but insists there's no victory yet. He'll extol the good economic growth and employment numbers, but say risks are nearly balanced, but with a wary eye for inflation to rekindle. It's here that there could be some downside risk to the testimony. With some concern, Powell leans towards fewer cuts. If you take a look here for year end, the futures market now prices in 3.75 25 basis point cuts, down from 7, but not far right now off the Fed's 3, although some officials are looking for only 2. That's where there'd be downside risk. A minority opinion out there that the funds rate ain't broke relative to the performance of this economy, so why fix it? Listen tomorrow for how Powell characterizes how much current rates are restraining the economy for clues about how much relief he thinks the economy might need. And Melissa, one more thing. The upside risk could come from how much he characterizes those January inflation numbers as just one-off.
Guy's got a question.
Real quick, Steve. The New York Community Bank, does it come up in any context? And how does he address it if it does?
Sure. I think that it comes up because, first of all, we're approaching that anniversary of the Silicon Valley Bank failure. So you might have some discussion around that relative to the financial regulatory stuff I was talking about. I think, again, the Fed sees this thing sort of the way it saw SVB, as a kind of one-off. What's going on at New York Community Bank does not appear to be the what do you want to call it? The canary in the coal mine for the commercial real estate problems on the books of the banking system. That's not it. There may be one yet, Guy, but I don't think this is it.
All right, Steve, thank you. Steve Liesman.
Pleasure.
Tim, what'd you make of the move in the 10-year?
Great song by The Police, by the way, Canary in a Coal Mine. And the move in the 10-year, I think, was somewhat a function of the ISM number. We had a 52.6. We were expecting 53. There was some deflationary dynamics in that number. And I think if you look at, again, 3 rate cuts by the end of the year, I think, if anything, I think Powell needs to talk about liquidity conditions out there. I think there is so much liquidity sloshing around, and I think that has something to do with even, you know, Bitcoin's move today. So that's interesting for me, but I think that the macro data right now on the labor market is all that matters, and we haven't seen a whole lot of weakness.
Coming up, we're watching Nordstrom After Hours shares on the move after reporting results and details from the quarter next. And speaking of retail, an absolute bullseye for Target, shares surging after a big boost in profits, but are investors ignoring the company's sales forecast? We're diving into that one when Fast Money returns.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Nordstrom shares dropping after its latest earnings. CNBC's Courtney Reagan's got the details. Court.
Hi, Melissa. Good to see you. So Nordstrom shares, as you point out, are dropping sharply here, about 10% in immediate reaction to those results. The forecast for margins is likely the biggest drag on the shares. Earnings beat expectations. Revenues also stronger than expected, but led by the off-price Nordstrom Rack business. Revenues there grew 15%. The full-line department store saw revenues fall 3%. Digital sales all in, those were down also a little less than 2% in the quarter. They make up 38% of total sales. And the department store says its active beauty and women's apparel were the strongest categories. On the call, CEO Eric Nordstrom just now calling out running and on running, and Hoka as strength in active shoes and Vuori in apparel. Fragrance was leading beauty. And while Nordstrom hasn't been giving comparable sales, that's going to change. They're going to start doing so in the first quarter. And then on the call, CEO Eric Nordstrom said that comps at Nordstrom Rack in the fourth quarter did grow high single digits. And that's in addition to the revenue from those new Rack locations. So goals for this year overall include driving growth at the Nordstrom full line business. Interestingly, though, leading with digital and then supported by the stores. Nordstrom also launching an online marketplace. That'll be in April. It won't be third-party marketplace like an Amazon or Walmart necessarily, sort of curated, but again, new and emerging brands that might be offered online, but not necessarily in the stores. Melissa?
All right, Courtney, thank you. Courtney Reagan with the latest on Nordstrom. And let's stick with retail and let's do this all together because we want to do Target as well, topping the tape up 12% today after a top and bottom line beat this morning. The company, though, forecasting another year of weak sales ahead. The big box retailer also announcing today its new paid membership program, Target Circle 360, which will include perks like free two-day shipping and more time to return items. That stock having its best day since November. Julie, retail has had a huge run over the past 12 months or so. Overall, on average, I'm wondering where you fall here in terms of where you like retail.
Well, I think both of these have been kind of chronic underperformers in terms of their ability to execute, especially Nordstrom. You know, my concern is looking at the guidance is just that margins are clearly not where they need to be. And what they're having to do is they were really the leaders, the pioneers in omnichannel. And omnichannel really just hasn't borne out as well for retailers as it has for consumers. It's been great for us shopping. It's been terrible for retail. And I think Nordstrom is really the poster child of that. And now they have to justify these investments. So they're in a tough spot. Target, at least, seems to be executing in a little bit better position. Their inventory is where it needs to be. The question is how good is this business really over the next 10 years? You know, they're giving solid guidance, but my concern kind of remains, how good is this business if most of your benefits next year are about having better freight charges and shrink, right? It's not necessarily execution.
Yeah, Tim.
It's interesting because they beat on margin, and I think if they can get to this 6% operating margin, the street really is going to reward them. The gross margin was at 25.6, was better than expected. The sales numbers are good, as Julie pointed out. I mean, a lot of the good news comes from freight, and it comes from a year over, essentially lapping a 2Q on shrink, which we know has been a big deal. They made some comments about it, said it was going to be about the same as it was last year, so it's not like it's gotten a whole lot better, but that the relative comparisons have gotten a lot better. I like Target here. I like retail here, and I think, again, Walmart had a huge, you know, last few, call it a week, 10 days since it split. Not because of that. I think the fundamentals we've gotten from them. So I think both of these you can own.
All right. There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Bitcoin backtracking, the crypto hitting a new high and then taking a big U-turn. Could the drop continue or will the Bitcoin rally revive? Plus, slimming your waistline but packing pounds onto the U.S. budget, just how much the obesity battle could cost the consumer and the government. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Bitcoin hitting a new record intraday high today, briefly passing $69,000 before tumbling more than 7% late in the day. It is the cryptocurrency's first new high in over 2 years, the record marking a comeback in the crypto space after the collapse of FTX in 2022, increased interest in Bitcoin ETFs, and the upcoming halving, or halvening, adding to the recent rally. Higher? I mean, this is really an unbelievable. There's a headline today, BlackRock spot Bitcoin ETF over $1 billion.
Yeah, and I was watching this morning on the Squawk Box, and there was a whole conversation about, great show, 6 to 9, about how it could, you know, effectively double from here, given its history, given the halving coming up and all these things that I don't particularly understand. And I'm saying to myself, and Joe Kernan actually said it as well.
With Pomp, yeah.
Yeah, he goes, you know, that actually sort of scares me. And as it turns out, as they were having that conversation, it was when Bitcoin started to turn. So if you look at a chart, not that it necessarily matters. I mean, this is clearly where we've failed before. If you go back in time, understanding we made a new all-time high. But when you see a reversal of that magnitude in something like this, I do believe it's telling you something. I am shocked that Coinbase, given the run it's had from 112 north to 200, didn't sell off more than it did. MicroStrategy is the same way. But today's one of those days for Bitcoin specifically you want to bookmark.
It is one of these days, too, where Coinbase didn't have any sort of balance issues or outages because of the super high volume.
I think that's interesting. No, true. And I guess I think about this addressable market that is now in the entire digital space. I've certainly said that that's a reason I think Coinbase is an on-ramp. But I don't think this is just about the halvening. And what I mean, this is about the entire space. And this is about the Fed. And this is, look, gold is at all-time highs, too. There's a reason why they are moving in tandem. And even at times, one is very much underperformed the other. I think there's a dynamic here. And it does have something like Super Tuesday, whatever happens, we know we have a political calendar in this country that could create some volatility. If you think you've seen Bitcoin do a few things, wait till you get some political volatility in this country and see what it does.
All right. Coming up, battling obesity and the budget, how weight loss drugs could end up costing the government more than $1 trillion. More on that angle next. Plus, a small cap crunch shares of Endava down more than 40% over the past week. But one of our traders is sticking with this name. The case for that one when Fast Money returns.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Small cap tech company Endava continuing to slide after last week's earnings report, down another 2+% today to bring its losses for the week to more than 40%. Julie flagged this company ahead of earnings as a potential stock to watch. So how do you feel about it now, Julie?
Well, you know, like one of my favorite hobbies is to look at the comments on YouTube whenever I'm on TV. They're really, really helpful. Like one of them mentioned, like I was looking really old and it was like a great opportunity to set up my Botox appointment. So very helpful comments. One guy said, do the opposite of whatever Julie says. And in this case with Endava, that probably would have worked out really well for you. Look, this is kind of the classic case in technology where the company has reasonably good business momentum and then they hit a real air pocket and the stock gets pretty punished. And I think that makes sense because not only does it take time to kind of rebuild the business, but the credibility for management, that process, rebuilding that, it really takes time. For us as long-term investors, this business is still delivering 20% free cash flow margins. It doesn't have debt. It's in a really good position from a capital structure standpoint. And it's a variable cost business. So for them, it's very easy for them to, you know, reduce their headcount and keep their margins still really high. It's, you know, still high teens in operating margins. So I think for us, the fundamentals are still okay. But if you're not a long-term investor, I don't think it's going to be an easy ride in the very near term.
All right, Julie, thanks for that. Coming up, insurance payout, where investors may find the next big AI disruptor. We got the details on that when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money, securing new partnerships with Microsoft and Amazon. This data company is deep in the generative AI space. Rohit Kapoor is the CEO of EXL Services. Rohit, great to have you with us.
Thank you.
So the biggest portion of your customers are insurance companies, and you think that there's a tremendous opportunity. In what way can AI help insurance?
So the insurance industry in the U.S. is a fascinating industry. Number one, it's fragmented. Number two, it's got a lot of legacy and debt-ridden technology architecture. And number three, there's a lot of promise with a number of consumers that you sell to. AI can actually help in terms of improving the decision-making. So when you're trying to do your distribution and trying to acquire new customers, AI can be very powerful and very helpful in that. It can help you in terms of reducing your operational cost and efficiency. So when you're processing claims or you're processing an insurance service line, that's something that you can bring down the cost in a very significant and material way. And then finally, because you've got so much of data, you can actually come up with real powerful insights that you can monetize and that you can action in a very powerful way.
As Tim will tell you, playing for the Yankees, I mean, that's the gold standard. But partnering with Microsoft and Amazon, like you just announced over the last couple of weeks, that's pretty big. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we partnered with Amazon. We've really started to use Amazon AWS Bedrock. We combine that with our generative AI workbench, and we can create very powerful solutions quickly. Today, the whole thing is about how do you create solutions at low cost with speed. And what we've got is we've got a workbench, which is very modular. It's something that we can use very easily. Our clients can leverage it very easily. We have 50 pre-built accelerators on top of that, and we have about 150 use cases that we can easily deploy. So this partnership for us is really critical because AWS Bedrock allows us to be able to access some of the foundation models from a single API, and we can pick and choose which language model we want to use and apply that into our workbench.
So you've got less than a minute, so this is a challenge, Rohit, to you. But in terms of trying to understand sort of the benefits of AI, I think we're sort of still trying to wrap our arms around it, but the markets want to run away with the story in terms of how it's treating the stocks. And so can you just sort of encapsulate what sorts of savings, productivity gains, does that mean for your clients, for insurance companies, for instance, just to use that as the example?
Yeah, so I'll give you some very quick examples. In terms of distribution and agent uplift, that's almost 200%. In terms of reducing your operational cost and reducing the churn of your customer base, that's about 20 to 25%. In terms of operational cost efficiency, that's 30 to 40%. So these are very powerful. The problem is, how do you make AI real and work?
Sure. Rohit, thanks for coming in. Appreciate it. Rohit Kapoor, EXL Services. Up next, final trades. Final trade time, Julie.
U.S. physical therapy, small is beautiful. That's all I got.
Tim.
I am a Volpe fan, though. EWW, Mexico, going to all-time highs. I like it.
Dan.
Yeah, TLT looks like it's going to 100.
Guy.
Big win by the Mets tonight. Slumberjay. No, I still like
it. I threw a compliment. And
Thanks for watching Fast. Mad Money starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/fastmoneydisclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.